Thank you for listening this morning, this afternoon. Today, we're going to be discussing a little bit about COVID-19, just to kind of help the community out there, give more information for everybody to be more aware. And to help us with that discussion, we have two special guests. We have Dr. Brown, Dr. Carly Brown from Ashwell Medical Group, and Walkiria Soriam, a volunteer from the parish of St. Eugene, who is also here to help me with the interview with Dr. Brown. We have been into this situation for the past 2.5 months with COVID-19 since everything started. And we have been in quarantine, you know, obviously for all that time. And so it's been very challenging for everybody to come to the realization that we may have to be in this situation for a little more time. We kind of just want to open up the opportunity today. The virus, the how everything started. What can you tell us about that?
Sure. I think one important thing to remember is that the information is changing moment by moment. So what all of us can do is try our best to give the most current information, but it's a challenge. And yes. What we do know right now is that COVID-19 is the name we give to the disease caused by coronavirus. Coronavirus is a group of family of viruses. We have many of them, and included in this family are viruses like SARS or MERS. These were lethal viruses that occurred, you know, several years ago that are still out there, but we don't see wide outbreaks of them for the most part anymore. But they are also part of the coronavirus family. COVID-19 is the disease caused by the newest coronavirus that we have essentially discovered and has swept our world. And the first case of this was really documented in a city called Wuhan, China. Mm-hmm. But there is some new information coming out that although we did not hear as Americans about this perhaps until January or December, but depending on who you ask. In fact, there were probably cases as early as November. And you may have heard that of a festival or a market in Wuhan City that
right.
People have blamed for this virus, but I don't think that we have convincing evidence that that is where the virus originated, and I think people just don't know at this point. We do know that it originally started in an animal
okay.
And then came via feces or contact to, you know, humans. So these are coronaviruses especially are transmitted from animals to humans, and that's important to remember.
Yes.
And I think that it's also important to remember that viruses, they do not have nationalities.
Correct.
They don't have ethnicities. They don't have races. They don't have colors.
Yes.
Viruses are just, you know, groups of material, genetic material that transmit from human to human regardless of whom you are or
yes.
Where you come from.
Right now, you explained to us, you know, the origins of this virus. Tell us a little bit about what is it different than other viruses like SARS, the symptoms, how is that coronavirus any different than those previous viruses that we have known?
Mm-hmm. So SARS and MERS were not actually, while they were very lethal, they were not actually as contagious as COVID-19 is.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been able to contain them over time. The issue with COVID-19 is that it has spread, or this coronavirus, this newest coronavirus, has spread as a pandemic worldwide
right.
Because of our inability to contain it from its origins.
Yes, and I'm sorry to interrupt there, but some people have been even saying, you know, it's just a flu. Mm-hmm. It's just something that will go away,
mm-hmm.
And it's not.
It's not. So a flu traditionally is from a group of virus called influenza, right? So it's a different type of virus, right? But the patterns, the way that COVID-19 or coronavirus, this coronavirus that causes COVID-19 behaves is similar to influenza
mm-hmm.
In the way that it is kind of its patterns, or we suspect that it will be.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it is not the same because the flu is much less lethal
mm-hmm.
Than this coronavirus and COVID-19, the complications that come from that. It's also not as contagious. So that's something to remember. The other important thing to remember is that with influenza, we have a vaccine.
Yes.
And we also have immunity, which has been built over exposure over the years to some extent.
Right.
So while we still want to get a vaccine for the flu every single year,
mm-hmm.
When the more vaccines you get, the more immunity we have, and we also have some herd immunity. But for COVID-19, that is not the case. Correct. And it is different in that way.
Yes.
It's also different in its symptoms.
Yes, let's talk a little bit about the symptoms. What are the symptoms that people should be worried about? You know, if they feel that they should go and get a test done and that kind of thing, what are the symptoms, the initial symptoms of coronavirus?
So it's important to remember that when you have coronavirus and you have the COVID-19, which is the disease caused by coronavirus, you can be both symptomatic or have symptoms, and you can also be asymptomatic, which means you have no symptoms. And despite whether you have symptoms or not, you are still contagious. You can still spread this to the people around you that you love and care for.
And I'm sorry, this is very important to talk about, because so many people, you know, don't think that they don't have to keep the social distance. Because they're saying, you know, well, I don't have any symptoms. I don't live with anybody who's sick.
Right.
I haven't been close to anybody who's sick. Mm-hmm. So I don't have to be careful. The fact is that anybody could have the virus and not have any symptoms, right?
That is exactly right. And I think we need to make sure that everybody understands that. So we repeat it, is that there is no way to know who has the virus and who doesn't by looking at them. So we wear masks and we keep social distancing to protect others from us giving you the virus. And
yes,
that's very important to remember. I will tell you, I have tested probably 300 people in the last 2 weeks, and we have had seven patients actually who have been positive, five of whom are totally asymptomatic, and two who have symptoms. So a majority of those people have been asymptomatic, and they had no contact with anyone that they know had the virus. So that is important.
Concerning.
It's very concerning. It highlights that we definitely have community spread here in Asheville and in surrounding areas.
Right.
And that people need to be worried about that. And the ways that we cut back on that worry is just by protecting ourselves.
Right.
And that includes those people who are at higher risk to stay home. And then if you are venturing out into the community, it should be for necessities or to work. Or to be with the people that you worship with in an open environment where you can protect yourself through social distancing, masks.
Yes, I would like to ask something, and it's about the people who is at risk. Because we heard the word all the time, but what does it mean? Who are those? The one who have diabetes? The one who are overweight? Who are we talking really about? Mm-hmm. Or they have to be someone who is a terminal ill, perhaps they have cancer? What the word means when you say at risk?
I think that's a great question. And the problem to some extent is that we're still finding those answers every day. And so sometimes the answer moves a little bit. You know what I mean? But what I would say is that we know that about 80% of people who contract the virus, that's 80 people, 80%, will recover and be fine. But about 1 in 5 people will become very sick from complications of this virus. Those people who are at higher risk include the elderly, people who are immune compromised, who may be treated for cancer, who may be treated for other diseases for which they take medication that suppresses their natural immune system. There are also people who people who suffer from obesity may be at higher risk, people who are diabetic, have heart disease. And we also know that, and we're not sure why yet, but minority communities are also at higher risk, especially Black, Brown, and people of color, Hispanic people are all at higher risk from complications of COVID-19. And when I say that, what I mean is that they could go on to develop severe respiratory symptoms, which result in them having to go to the hospital and perhaps, unfortunately, needing oxygen and maybe even needing to be on a ventilator. And we don't know why, but we do know that certain communities, especially minority communities, have poor access to care, both every day and in this situation specifically. Also, people of lower socioeconomic means have to go to work every day.
Correct.
And this is very challenging in a pandemic. And they're more exposed.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They also live in homes where there's more people. They don't have access to incorrect information about health and having to wash hands and
yes.
wearing masks. So one thing that's really important to remember is that this virus disproportionately affects people who have less. And so we want those people, they have less of finances, not less of heart or soul or community, but less
right.
of finances. So what we want to do is make sure that we reach these people to tell everybody, look, it is us regular people who get this virus and get sick from it. We need to protect ourselves.
And that is the reason why we're here today, because, you know, we want to be able to inform the community and to make more awareness that
That's right.
especially in minority communities, this virus is increasing much more.
That's right.
One thing I wanted to get back to is with regard to people who are high risk. Mm-hmm. And I see two different things there, and tell me if what you think about that. Mm-hmm. But I see that there are people who are high risk of developing something serious because of coronavirus.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody is at risk of getting the virus.
Absolutely. The virus does not spare anyone. And one thing that I think is interesting is that when we tested my patient population, we tested about 250, 300 people separate from the city. We did antibody testing, mm-hmm. and we saw that there was very little immunity in our community, which means that people have not been exposed to some extent,
mm-hmm.
and they do not have any inherent ability to fight this themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I had a lot of people say to me, you know, I was sick in March. I bet you I had coronavirus. But I would tell you that it's very unlikely that you did. It's much more likely that you had the flu or you had H1N1 in this community or another respiratory virus. Because going through coronavirus and COVID-19 is not the same as that.
Yes.
You are much more ill. Mild disease can be anywhere from 14 to 21 days. Cannot get out of bed. You cannot walk from your bed to the bathroom because of severe muscle aches and difficulty breathing, chest pain, dry cough, high fevers at night especially, hallucinations. And this goes back to your question about symptoms.
Yes.
What does it look like? The truth is that now we see lots of different symptoms. We see nausea, vomiting, diarrhea. We see loss of sense, taste and smell,
mm-hmm.
Dry cough. So this is why I think sometimes this gets spread more frequently, because people even with very, very small amounts of symptoms mm-hmm. have the disease.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Brown, with regard to the symptoms, what are the initial symptoms that somebody needs to be on the lookout for?
Mm-hmm. So I think the most important initial symptoms are dry cough
okay.
and fever. Those are two okay. important ones. But I think that you should just be aware that even if you just have diarrhea and vomiting, mm-hmm. you could still have the virus.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Some people, initially, I have one patient who just had loss of smell. That was her only symptom that she had.
That's it. Wow.
So there are, it is unusual in the way that it presents.
Okay. And how about, what are the symptoms and in kids and in, mm-hmm. in babies, which is something that we have been learning about as well.
Sure.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Mm-hmm. We see that children are not getting as sick as adults, mm-hmm. and that is a blessing, right?
Yes.
I mean, thankfully for that. Most children, even if they get the coronavirus, will not have the severe complications that adults can have.
Right.
That's not true for all children, but for most. Especially if you have a child who's immune compromised, you want to protect them from this.
Right.
But most children will suffer from fevers and muscle aches and some maybe vomiting and diarrhea. We have definitely seen that.
Okay.
And then they tend to get better on their own.
Okay.
But they can still pass it to the adults.
Mm-hmm.
And even our older grandparents and that live in our homes and individuals who are sick. So just we want to be conscientious of that.
Okay.
Also, we want to make sure that people know that there's also a syndrome called the multi-system
yes.
inflammatory syndrome,
okay. mm-hmm.
which we see in children who have possibly been exposed or had COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
We are actually seeing it in children who we know have had COVID-19 and have been exposed. We most frequently see it in children who have had a household contact, so
okay.
an adult or parent who had COVID-19.
And what are the symptoms of this mm-hmm. syndrome?
So what this syndrome is specific for, or very much looks like another illness we see called Kawasaki's disease.
Okay.
And it's inflammation of our blood vessels. And we see that in children. And so you see a fever, rash, and inflammation of the blood vessels. And it results usually in pretty severe illness. Most of those children end up in the hospital.
Oh, my goodness.
And we have treatment. But, you know, and a majority of those children will recover, but not all of them.
Okay.
So, and it's pretty, you know, we're talking many days in the ICU, in the hospital, and it's very scary.
Yeah, it's very scary.
I think when I think for myself of getting the virus, you know, and I say this just so everybody knows that doctors are human too. Like, I don't think of being sick myself, and I don't think of being worried about, you know, having the fever and the chills. What I think about is my children.
Correct.
And what it is to be away from them or have to go to the hospital and not be able to see them.
Correct.
Or to potentially, you know, not be able to survive the virus and not have them with me or have them be able to see me before I do pass. I mean, that's what's so scary, I think, for most of us.
We for everybody.
Yes.
I think we all think about that. I tell you that, you know, I think about it as well, you know, what would I do if I get the virus? You know, will I spend 2 weeks in the garage, you know, just to kind of storm it out there, hoping that none of my kids, I have four kids, hoping that none of them get it, my wife and everything. So it's scary to think about it.
It is. I mean, I have three children as well, and my husband's also a doctor, and he's in the hospital doing procedures on COVID patients, you know, and I'm testing COVID patients all day. So we both have a lot of risk.
Right.
And one thing we faced when we first, all this all came about a couple months ago was, do we separate for a time being to reduce the risk to our family that they might lose both parents?
Right.
And so for a month we lived apart actually.
Very difficult.
Yes.
My goodness.
But with time, as that went on, it became too expensive to live apart.
Right.
And so we said, you know what, we're going to have, so every family is making difficult decisions here. And nobody is alone. That's an important message to send, is that we all in some way are touched by this.
Yes.
And although we can't touch one another, that doesn't mean that it's not affecting everybody.
Right. And I'm thinking that because of that, we all need to come together. And I hope everybody listening can put themselves and thinking, you know, what if I get to have this virus? You know, what will happen? And just think about it. But let's not just stay there. Let's come up with ways of for us to preventing it to happen so that we never get there.
That's right.
And I'm thinking that a lot of people are just don't think they will get it, you know, and they just go about their day, you know?
Yeah. And I think that maybe we should talk a little bit about the fear too, because I think there's especially communities who fear having to go to the hospital for reasons that are beyond just their sickness. Right?
Right.
They're afraid to present to the hospitals because of their immigration status.
Right.
And their language, you know, and their inability to effectively communicate in a hospital which may or may not be able to speak to that back to them in their own language. These are all, you know, things that people worry about, and they're real true concerns. And I just wanted to honor them and say that, you know, I think you could feel comfortable, everybody listening, that the medical community sees no nationality or paperwork or ethnicity or color or anything like that when you come to be treated. The medical community does not care.
Yes.
We know that disease affects everybody. But unfortunately, you know, we too are subject to the rules and structures imposed upon us by the people who make laws. So I would encourage people to vote if they want things to change.
Exactly.
But that does not come from the medical community. The medical community would like to be able to treat everyone, regardless of any matter whatsoever. We treat disease, that's all we treat.
And I think it's important to with the same message that you're saying, you know, if somebody feels that they're having symptoms, they're concerned, they need to call, they need to go to a hospital, they need to make it, because it's important. You know, don't be afraid, like you're saying it.
Don't be afraid. And I think you would find that if you went to a doctor's office, most of us will try to protect under all circumstances anyone, because people are people.
Yes, thank you so much. Let's talk a little bit about the virus and how long it could live on surfaces. You know, we are sanitizing our hands all the time. We're making sure we're cleaning everything. Let's talk a little bit about that. Why are we doing this?
So the coronavirus can live on surfaces of different textures or different materials for varying amounts of time, anywhere from a few hours to a few days.
Okay.
Originally, we thought that this was a major source of transmission, mm-hmm. but we actually know now that probably the major source of transmission is from human to human.
Okay.
And through droplets. And what that means is that when you're speaking to another person or coughing or sneezing, we all have droplets or particles, saliva that comes out of our mouth without us knowing. And those particles fall to the ground. But they also stay, depending on how big they are, the larger droplets will fall to the ground and settle on surfaces like doorknobs and tables and gas pumps and things like that. But some will stay in the air, and that's what we call airborne particles. So we have the two major methods of protecting ourselves the first one is washing your hands.
Yes.
And I would tell people that you do not need sanitizer, hand sanitizer, to get the virus off of your hands. Simple soap and warm water and washing for 20 seconds will significantly reduce your risk of disease.
Okay.
So if you have access to water and soap, that is your best method of keeping well.
Okay, okay.
And then also preventing you from touching your own face.
Mm-hmm.
So we really want to make sure that you're not touching your face. If you do, you're washing your hands, then you're touching your face, then you're washing your hands again. But if you don't have soap and water, hand sanitizer with an alcohol content above 70% kills the virus.
That will do it.
But we also want to use, you know, some level of bleach, is just any household bleach, to clean our, you know, our doorknobs, our surfaces. And, you know, when we have packages that come to the house or groceries, whatever you're using that way, you know, that we just make sure that, you know, that perhaps we leave them there for a few, you know, a day and then we pick them up. But to be honest, at this point, there has not been significant transmission that way.
Okay.
We're really more worried about the droplets and coming from human to human.
Okay.
And wearing a mask, if you're out and about, significantly reduces that risk. And the reason why is because it prevents that those particles from coming out of your mouth.
Right.
And landing on somebody else.
Yes. Okay.
So it's not preventing you from getting a regular cloth mask is not preventing you from getting disease, but it's preventing you from giving the disease to people around you.
Right.
It does convey some protection.
Right.
But not as great protection as, say, a surgical mask or a respirator mask, like an N95. But most people, the medical community is really who needs that type of protection.
Okay.
Regular people, cloth masks are very, very helpful. And I'll tell you that some people say that if 80% of our population wore cloth masks in their day-to-day activities, we would get rid of the virus altogether.
Oh, my goodness.
That
wow.
is lovely. Would you just say that again?
Yes, absolutely. So it's important to wear masks for a few reasons, but the most important thing is that if we all wear them, if 80% of our population wears them, then we could get rid of the virus transmission altogether.
I guess.
And this stresses how we can come together as a community to get rid of this thing that's tearing us apart. So we have power over this virus. And I think a lot of people feel their power has been taken away from them. But we do have power.
Yes.
It's just a matter, it doesn't look like a rock that's thrown through a window. It doesn't look like a gun or violence against other people. It looks like a cloth mask. And that's hard for people to understand.
Right.
But that's your power right there.
Yes. And so important, you know, we need to stress to the community that, you know, it's important to wear the mask and, and not to be, I have heard stories of people going to the grocery store with a mask and everybody just walking away from them because nobody else is wearing it, right? And when they see a person wearing a mask, they're just kind of looking at the person like, you're sick.
Yeah.
And everybody else walks away. I'm thinking we should probably be walking away from the person who's not wearing a mask.
That's what I do.
If
you're not wearing a mask, I'm out of there. I am really out of there. And in fact, I am only doing any of my grocery shopping in Buncombe County because Buncombe County, you're required to wear a mask. Mm-hmm. And all businesses, places of business, are required to have masks. And so I will not do any shopping outside of the county because of that, because I want to support the businesses who are doing the right thing for our community.
Let's remember we're all together in this, and whatever we need to do, let's just do it. Mm-hmm. Someone approached me this past Sunday with a particular comment about wearing a mask. And this person was telling me, I kind of have given up on COVID-19 because, I'm hearing in the news that people who wear masks are ending up sick because of their own bacteria, breathing their own bacteria.
Mm-hmm. I think that the benefit of wearing the mask outweighs any risk that you may have that way.
Yes.
And I would say that in your case, Dr. Rauna, what would you say, how many hours a day do you use that mask in your face?
Yes, if I'm lucky, I'm wearing this mask. So right now you cannot see me, but I'm wearing a cloth mask. But most of the day I'm wearing a respirator or a surgical mask. And I would say maybe anywhere from 6 to 8 hours a day. And it is very uncomfortable.
And she's really right on my right side. And believe me, she looks very healthy. So far, no bacteria have affected her.
Exactly.
Nothing has affected me yet. But we've probably tested 500 people in the last couple of weeks. But we do it with protection, and we are trained professionals. And that's important to remember as well, that we know what we're doing. And so we're able to help the rest of the community because that is our job.
Yes. Thank you, Dr. Brown. Let's talk a little bit about the number of people who have been infected in our Buncombe County, and maybe it's our roundings. We started really good. Yeah, I remember when things started in the country and the world. Buncombe County saw a very low spike of cases. Mm-hmm. It's not the case anymore, right?
So the cases are definitely increasing nationwide, mm-hmm. not just here. And
right.
And we are part of that trend. Some of the case counts that we see are increasing because we're testing more. So we're just discovering the cases that were already out there. Let's just be clear about that, mm-hmm. right? But, there is also community transmission here in Buncombe County. In the last 24 hours, I have tested many people, but I have had 6 positive cases, most of which have been asymptomatic. They do not have any symptoms. Mm-hmm. And so they have been unaware that they have been spreading the virus in our community without intent. They did
right.
not mean to do this, of
right.
course. But the importance of testing is that we know that this is happening. And
right.
it's also showing us that, yes, our cases are increasing mm-hmm. here in Buncombe County.
Yes.
And to some extent, that was expected as we open up.
Right.
But we also must also be aware that it's never so important to make sure that we are adhering to the safety measures that we all know can help us.
Yes. As of yesterday, the Asheville Citizen Times reported that 342 people have been infected mm-hmm. and that 29 people have died of the virus.
Right.
Mostly people in nursing homes. Mm-hmm. Our hearts go out to the families who have lost mm-hmm. their loved ones. It's just really terrible.
And I think what's interesting is I see a lot of people, especially in social media, say, well, this doesn't affect people like me. This affects older people. And I have 2 things to say to that. One is that older people are part of our community. And
yes.
they have a wisdom and grace and love to share with us that if we lose them, we will not recover. And
yes.
we cannot discount people because of their age. They are still people. And that is very frustrating to me.
Yes.
And I think that we need to do everything in our power to protect them as being as important in our community as anyone else.
Correct, correct.
And I also think that it's misinformation that younger people are not affected.
Mm-hmm.
So we see healthy 30 and 40-year-old individuals on ventilators in our ICUs. It is not as great a number as you will have elderly people who are affected who end up, with significant illness or death from this virus. But it is still there.
It is happening.
We still have plenty of young, healthy people who are lost to this virus.
When we think about older people, we should be thinking about us.
Mm-hmm.
If we happen to lose somebody who is a little older, who is elderly, that person is us.
Is a great loss.
Yes.
And, I again, my heart goes out to those family members who have who have family in the nursing homes, for people who are in nursing homes right now who are going to be listening to this, that just to know that everybody is thinking of you.
Yes.
We have not forgotten.
Thank you. We're going to talk a little bit about the vaccine. If you can give us some light on what should people expect about a vaccine, what are the misconceptions, even though some different labs are working on it and they're giving good news on the process that they're doing. What is the process right now, as far as you know, Dr. Brown, of finding a vaccine for this virus?
Sure. So one, I would say that some good news is that there are people worldwide who are looking for vaccines, not just in the US, not just in Latin America, not in South America, not in Europe, not in, you know, in everywhere all over the world, in Asia, people are looking for vaccines. And this is, so hopefully we will eventually have a vaccine. What's challenging is to go through the process of, once you actually find the vaccine, is getting it to be tested and safe in humans, and then to create enough vaccine to be able to inoculate the world. And then also to have people trust that that vaccine will do more good than harm.
Yes.
And right now, we will need a lot of education, because there already exists distrust in vaccines, despite the overwhelming evidence they are safe.
Yes.
And, you know, I think that so there is definitely hope, but it is long time coming. It could be anywhere from 6 months to 2 years. And then once we get the vaccine, we're not sure if we'll have to have it yearly, like the flu vaccine.
Right.
Or it will be a one-time vaccine. There's just no way of us knowing at this point. But
right,
we can all be very hopeful. But also, I would like to mention that it would be better to come up with solutions if we cooperated as a planet together. And the more we push one another away, the less we are successful in finding solutions for our whole planet. We need to put aside our differences,
yes,
so that all people have access to the discoveries of different nations.
Yes.
We've gone beyond money. Let's just make sure that people are saved at this point.
We need to work together.
Work together, absolutely.
To work together.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I think is important for our community to know, for those who are listening, is the testing sites, mm-hmm, that we have in Buncombe County. As another way of preventing, you know, the spread of coronavirus, what are the places where the community can go and get tested?
So the testing sites change basically by day,
okay,
and time.
Okay.
But the best way to find that information is on the Buncombe County website. But if you go on to the health department website, it will list where those testing sites are going to be, and they kind of move to, mm-hmm, try to access different communities.
Yes, as a matter of fact, that would be my question, because some people in the community, that they have felt sick, and they just tell themselves that we cannot afford to go and be tested. Mm-hmm. So, and they are really sick. When they go to the emergency room, then the bill will going to be, you know,
sure,
really, really,
right,
expensive,
right,
instead of going to a testing site. Mm-hmm. So, what can we tell the community? Expect to pay $100 for the test when you go to one of these sites, or expect to pay $500 if you go to the emergency room? What would be like an accurate information?
So I think that the emergency room is only the appropriate place if you are having trouble breathing, chest pain, or that, you know, you are suffering to the point where you do not feel that being at home is safe anymore. Right, if your oxygen levels drop, that's the appropriate place for the emergency room. But for somebody who's just suffering from symptoms, what you might want to do is call the Buncombe County Health Department, because they can guide you to the right testing site and give you your options. For people without insurance, through the Buncombe County Health Department, the testing is probably going to be free.
Well, thank you so much to both of you for being with us today to talk about this important issue. I really appreciate your time. Any last words that both of you would like to say for all those who are listening?
I think, Dr. Brown, I think that my last words are that we will do better with any difficult situation when we come together. And it doesn't matter what the situation is. We have, if you're suffering now from depression or anxiety or worry, try to think of this in context, that as a planet, we have gone through many troubled times. And we are too, again, in a troubled time. I would agree with that. But like other times, we have been able to get through this with our perseverance, our resilience, our togetherness, for some faith, for some hope and dreams. And looking at our children, we need to come together and get through this for them.
Thank you, Dr. Brown.
And I would like to take the opportunity to thank you, Dr. Brown, because all the material, all the fabric, all the thread, all the needles, whatever you have done to help us create the mask, the cloth mask that they are right now in the community, they were able to be done because you provide all that material. So we have those masks in most of our churches, the Catholic churches, and we also have shared them with the different trailer parks. Mm-hmm. So we'll keep it. Still, we are sewing masks, and thank you so much.
You're welcome, and I am so glad. So those masks were donated by Masks of Love, and the Dogwood Health Trust had a big part in helping to provide funds to get that material together. So I just wanted to acknowledge those groups.
One last thing I'd like to say, thank you to all doctors and nurses and people who are working and in the healthcare field. Everybody is so courageous to be working there at these times. And I want to invite those who are listening, if you can be nice to a doctor or a nurse or anybody working in the medical field today, please do that.